Welcome to the Run the Tape podcast, your one-stop shop for music, media, and technology news from the perspective of independent creators and up-and-coming innovators. I'm your host, T. Nikki Page, multimedia artist, producer, futurist, and all-around music fanatic. This week on the podcast, we're discussing new research findings about women in the music industry, how our music tastes and discovery evolve as we age, and we welcome old artists we love back to the stage, screen, and airwaves. These topics and more, let's run the tape. A new report on U.S. music chart trends has found that female-identifying performers, songwriters, and producers remain underrepresented and stereotyped in the music industry. The 6th Annual University of Southern California Annenberg Inclusion Initiative Report, which focused on Billboard's year-end Hot 100 chart for 2022, discovered that the amount of top-selling female artists in the U.S. increased that year. However, the proportion of female songwriters making any commercial impact is still mediocre. The amount of women represented overall on the chart was around 30%. Just 14% of songwriters represented on the chart were women, which was a slight decrease actually from 2021, while only 3.4% of the 232 producers represented on the year-end chart were women, and one producer was non-binary. Specifically, the 30% representation has marked a new high for the amount of female artists on the year-end chart over the past decade, but the statistics for female songwriters and producers have largely stayed the same over the past decade. The beginning of the report was in 2012. That was the beginning of the Annenberg report. And since then, the amount of female songwriters represented in the Billboard year-end chart has never been higher than 14.4%. According to Dr. Stacey L. Smith, who led the report, there's good news for women artists this year, but there's a lot of work that still needs to be done for women to have equal opportunity in the music industry. They stated that the majority of artists on the 2022 year-end chart were actually from underrepresented racial backgrounds, still with a decrease since 2021, and an 8.4% decrease from 2020. So we're still seeing that we're not fully in the diversity and inclusion sector as much as we'd like to think we are these days. The peak amount of female producers represented on the chart also landed in 2019 when 5% of producers at the year-end list were women. So we are at a decline from that as well. Dr. Smith added that until women and men artists hire women songwriters and producers, the numbers won't move. It's more than just allowing an artist to credit themselves on a song. It's about identifying talent and hiring women in these roles. That's the only way that we're going to see change occur. In its analysis of Grammy Award nominees, the report found that 13.9% of individual nominees were women, with one non-binary nominee. And the Annenberg report suggests that, in conclusion, while gains are made for female artists represented in the charts, we're seeing gains. Women behind the scenes in songwriting and production roles are still vastly underrepresented. They propose that women are stereotyped in terms of the types of songs and genres they can create and the roles that they can play and how they're sexualized, and their talents and experience are discounted because of this. The study follows backlash in the UK to the 2023 Brit Awards Artist of the Year nomination category for being filled with only male artists. Nominees for the upcoming awards, well, it actually happened already. Nominees for the awards this month were announced on January 12th. And in the UK Artist of the Year category, Central Cee, Fred Again, George Ezra, Harry Styles, and Stormzy were all nominated. Now, the Brit Awards abandoned gender categories in favor of gender neutral ones. So there, I suppose there used to be female artist of the year, male artist of the year, and now they're doing just one category, gender neutral category. But now with a gender neutral category, we are not seeing female artists nominated for UK Artist of the Year. The category was completely male, and the awards were criticized by fans and figures from across the entertainment industry. What do you all think? How do you think that? That seems like that's maybe a downside to, you know, keeping things gender neutral. I personally am all for keeping things gender neutral. I think it's a good way to maintain equality. But what do you think is the solution to that? Because obviously that's probably not the outcome they were thinking when they fought to make gender neutral categories. I'm sure that's not the purpose of having a gender neutral category for all males to be nominated and for female and non-binary artists to feel excluded from that category. So what do you think a solution for that is? Chime in. In other music news, according to an estimate from the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry, an organization that represents the international music industry and people around the world, they say people around the world spend an average of 20.1 hours per week listening to music, up from 18.4 hours a week in 2021. We have a lot more ways to access music at any time in history and a whole world of unfamiliar styles to explore and a lot of new ways to discover new music. Now, they're saying that the thrill of discovering new songs and new sounds can actually be really beneficial mentally for people of all ages, except for, in most cases, people don't actually discover new songs and new sounds as much as they age. They say that our willingness to explore new and unfamiliar music actually declines with age, and multiple studies confirm that people lose their sense of, they use the term open-earedness, or our willingness to explore new music across our lives. You know, this willingness to explore new music actually expands and decreases. Okay, so here's the tea. Until the age of around 11, children are generally happy to engage with unfamiliar music. Early adolescence sees a reduction in open-earedness, but it's accompanied by an intense increase in music more generally. Open-earedness increases slightly during young adulthood, and then it starts to decline again as we age. A study in 2013 involving more than 250 participants confirmed this changing behavior. It said that the significance that we ascribe to music after adolescence declines and the amount of music we listen to reduces from a point of 20% of our waking time during adolescence to about 13% in adulthood. I'm sure that that particular percentage probably varies depending on how creative or how musical an adult is, because I personally feel like I listen to lots of music and I'm always discovering new music. I mean, hey, that's what I share on this podcast with you guys, right? Now, researchers have generally complementary theories to account for why this happens, and some of them interpret the observed decline in music engagement in terms of psychosocial maturity. So adolescents use music as an identity marker, and they use it to engage with and navigate social circles. You can think of, you know, like I grew up in the 90s, early 2000s, your taste in music often identified, you know, what crowd, what clique you hung with, you know, like there were the emo kids and then there were the jocks and things like that, right? So adults have developed personalities and established social groups. And so they're not necessarily using music as an identity marker to establish their social groups. And because of this, their drive to discover new music is lessened. Now, these same researchers also say that it's not necessarily just social identity that affects how we discover music as we age, but it also points to age-related changes such as hearing, specifically lowering your tolerance for loud and high-frequency sound as you age. That's one cause for reduced interest in new music for some people. Now, some other people say that people just have less time to explore their musical interests than younger people. And some think that there's a link between the decline in rate of new music consumption and increasing music intolerance, while others say that using chronological age as a predictor for stagnant musical taste without first considering the different ways we process and use music across our lifespan is important to look at. They say that teenagers tend to be very aware of what they're listening to, and adults who use music as motivation or an accompaniment for activities such as exercise or tasks may actually be less conscious of the extent of what they're actually listening to. I thought this was really interesting. They say that there's a consensus that people are highly likely to have their taste in music shaped by music, specifically the music they first encounter in adolescence. And I think that's interesting because a lot of the artists that I've interviewed on this podcast, when I asked what their musical inspirations are or who has kind of been an inspiration to their personal sound. They always say somebody that they really enjoy listening to in their youth and as a teenager. The adolescence shapes your musical taste, firstly, because our brains are developed to the point where we can fully process what we're hearing at adolescence. And secondly, because of the heightened state of emotions of puberty, they can create strong and lasting bonds and memory. So neuroscience provides some fascinating insights into how and why our musical tastes develop. We know, for example, that infants display an affinity for music they hear in their mother's womb. Also, musical taste can boil down to familiarity. A music neuroscientist said that we can think of our taste in music simply as a dopamine reaction to arising patterns in our brain that our brain recognizes that create expectation of pleasure based off the pleasure's past. So that's another reason why the things that we loved as teenagers can kind of shape what kind of music we like as adults. And unfortunately, because a lot of our music taste is formed in adolescence, after a couple of decades, the result sometimes with people is that, quote unquote, young people's music may not bring you much pleasure later on in life. So I personally don't think that all of us are just not going to discover new music as we age, because I love discovering new music. I personally enjoy discovering new music. These days, I don't find, you know, quote unquote, young people music to be that different than the music that I enjoy, because so much of it samples stuff that we grew up on. And so if you're finding yourself having a hard time discovering new music or getting into new music, or you're just trying to train your musical taste to continue to push boundaries, here are a couple of tips that they recommend to find new music and extend beyond your old favorites of youth, right? They say that cultivating different modes of listening, including going to concerts, listening by yourself, listening with other people and in social settings, can really help you expand your musical taste, as well as making music listening habitual. Like, not just listening when you're in the car or, you know, while you're on a run, but making it a habit of listening to music more frequently and being curious about what you're listening to, because you can help your brain form new patterns by finding something new that it hasn't heard before. And you just kind of have to be consistent with it. Don't assume that just because you don't immediately like an unfamiliar piece that it's not worth listening to. The more you listen, the better your brain will be at triggering a pleasure response, because really, this all comes down to dopamine release and triggering a pleasure response. Who knew? It's science, right? So you can also find a friend who's like a music lover, who's a music fanatic, who's always finding new songs to give you recommendations, because there's a good chance that you'll listen to music that's suggested to you by somebody you like and admire and somebody whose music tastes you already trust. And just keep listening to music that you already love, because music is music, right? Just be willing to revisit, you know, old beliefs that you've had, and even think outside the box when you describe musical tastes that you previously had that were negative, like saying, oh, I hate country, I hate jazz. You might like some new country artist. You might like some new jazz artist, you know? So don't feel like you have to keep up with new music trends. You know, music has been around since the beginning of time, so you don't necessarily have to listen to what everybody else is listening to, but there's thousands of years worth of music to explore. So I would encourage everybody who's feeling like they're starting to get a little older, get into their auntie uncle phase, to keep finding new music to listen to. It is totally worth it, not just for you, but for your brain and your mental health. You know, music is healing. Music is medicine, dude. After decades of singing background for legends of music such as George Duke, Marvin Gaye, Chaka Khan, and Stevie Wonder, singer-songwriter Lynn Davis is launching her own solo career with a new track called Can I Come Over? She's with us at the roundtable today discussing how women in music can take authority over their own careers. Before we hear from her at the roundtable, here's her new track, Can I Come Over?
Hey baby, I just thought I'd call, see how you doing, so glad you're So I got to know. Can I come over, baby? I'll just stay a while. I just need to see your smile.
Can I come over, baby?
I won't stay too long. I can't even do this on the phone. If I promise you not to lose control, if I offer you my heart and soul, can I come over?
My journey began many moons ago. Let's see, I officially started my career in the music business in, I say, 1979 through a wonderful jazz musician, composer, producer, George Duke, who's no longer with us. From there, Patrice Rushen, from there, Stevie Wonder, touring with quite a few different people, working with pages and pages of people in the studio, and soundtracks and writing songs. So that's where the journey began with George Duke back in the 70s. And I decided now to actually, it's not my first time actually going out for being a solo artist, but I don't really think the climate of the industry was for me. Signing those type of very restrictive, not very equitable, record deals. I wasn't the most compromising, and I always wanted to just sing and have control over my life, and the direction of the art that God gave me and the ideas that God gave me for myself. So this climate and this time period was really the season in which I think it was just, God ordained for me, you know, at this moment in time, where you can go out, you can present yourself as you see yourself, and your music, unencumbered with the interventions of business people who know very little about music a lot of the times. There's a lot in between. I don't know if you want me to name. I've worked with everyone from, like I said, Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, Madonna, Celine Dion. I've just had a very blessed loop, you know, career. And when I look back on it now, you know, it really set me up for this particular platform that I've embarked on now, my first solo project. And I'm just having a blast. It's not about trying to be a star or make a lot of money. It's just, I'm so free, you know, because I'm free of all of that stuff that goes along with when you're first getting in the business and I gotta make it, and so many artists are taking advantage of that because of that, you know? So, here I am.
I love that. You certainly have worked with some of the greats for sure. What was that like during that time? You know, I feel like the music industry was probably very different back then, right?
Music was so representative of our culture, as music usually is. But our culture then was very musical. I am a product of the Motown sound and Earth, Wind & Fire and all the doo-wop groups and stuff of the 60s and the 70s. And so we had a plethora of information to pull from, you know, musically. And classically trained and my jazz roots, it was just so fertile, the soil that we had to nurture us. And I feel like that's what's missing now for these children, you know. And, you know, we all talk about how jacked up the music business is now and how we don't like the music. And then where's the soul music? Where's the classic R&B music? And so I decided to stop talking about it and be about it and do something about it and do something against ageism and sexism and, you know, sizeism and all of that and defy all of that and say, you know, put the music out, let the people decide. And let's take it out of the hands of the business people and put it back into the hands of the artist.
I love that. I love that, you know, a lot. As an artist, I relate to a lot of the things you're speaking of. I started as a background singer maybe, I don't know, 15 years ago. And then I kind of stopped. I started working at a record label and stuff and just seeing the artists and what they went through up close. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to find my own lane doing this, you know?
Yes.
So I relate to that a lot. And I feel like I'm kind of in that generation that's right on the cusp between everything switching to being like online and social media and stuff. Yes. It was like watching all of the old, like a lot of the old way kind of dwindle away, you know, just as you're trying to make it. And then now you have to make a Twitter page and all these things. So it's just, it's very interesting to hear your perspective about that. Because, you know, you came from a time where like most people would say that was some of the best music that a lot of us have experienced. You know?
Best music, but a very exploitive time and a very unsupportive time of women. You know, i.e. Tina Marie, who was just incredible, you know, why is she living in Inglewood and driving in a Toyota, you know, and why wasn't she in ownership of her publishing? The deals were so exploitive.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think now is a really wonderful time, especially for women artists, you know. And I decided to go ahead and create my own record company and put out my music through Bella Records. and have nothing to do with all that stuff that interferes with your headspace and your creative space. And let's just do the music and let the people decide. And they have decided.
I love that. So yeah. What words of advice would you give to women who are in the music industry to continue to, you know, have autonomy over themselves and stand in their own power?
Well, let me ask you a question. Who do you know that is a woman that has autonomy and stands in her own power? And let's not talk about Beyonce because she has Jay-Z, you know, so someone that, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, who do you know that stands in her power and is in control of her masters, her everything, ownership, everything of her copyrights? Who do you know as a woman, as an artist, a woman? Who comes to mind?
I'm not really sure. The first person that comes to mind for me is maybe like Missy Elliott or somebody who's, you know, writing and producing and, you know, running her own sessions and stuff like that. You know,
but what do we know? What do we know of Missy's business?
We don't know.
Because Tina Marie, she played all the instruments, wrote all the songs, produced all the music. It was on a salary. Right. So let me interject this because of what I know to be true. I would say if to you or to anyone up and coming young artists, talk to Mariah Carey because she owns, she has ownership of all of that. She learned very well from her husband, I suppose, you know, and just experience. But that is the very point, that we don't have a lot of women, examples to help us and to guide us, you know. But Prince did try to tell us, what if we all owned work together, and what if we all did this ourselves,
right?
Didn't he try to tell us? Michael, you know, went out and bought back the rights to Little Richard's music and just gave it to him. He spent millions for that and he gave it back to him. That was a statement. So I would say learn the business aspect of your craft. Be ready and prepared as an artist. You know, decide who you want to be, how you want to present. And respect yourself and respect your boundaries and don't compromise.
Absolutely.
And it tickles me now because after just one song, releasing one song, I had major record companies DMing me saying, oh, we could help you, you know, give us a call. And I'm like cracking up going, there's no way that a woman my age could walk through your doors before releasing as an indie artist. And you would have said, oh, you know, you want somebody 18 or 12 or, you know what I mean? So I thought that was the win for not just for myself, but for all of us. And that's really why I'm doing this, is to say, be irrepressible, you know? I just wrote a book called Above Circumstances coming out, and it talks about the journey. But one of the essential things that happened when I decided to walk away from the music business about 20 years and regroup and just heal and do some other things that God had on my heart to do, I was able then from a different vantage point to view the business and to view what I had been through and to be healed from it and approach it differently. I think that this business attracts an array of people from every walk of life with every intention for being in this business. And there are very few just real pure artists that just want to do their music, you know. You know, like India Ree and my other sister, Lauren Hill, and, you know, and if there's so much business, there's so much bull crap, you know, that goes along with it. you know, nobody was concerned about Luther's size, but they bothered our sister Vesta Williams about it. And then when she lost the weight, you know, they still didn't. You know, so you have to go in with a certain amount of regard, unconditional regard for yourself, because people are going to come at you from every angle. But if you haven't done your homework, if you have a team of people that you can trust and that know their stuff, know more than you, hopefully. You know, I just learned a lesson with the release of my first one that, you know, the people that work for you really have to be reflective of your energy. And it doesn't matter what contacts they have or what they can do for you. And I knew better, but I just learned a very, you know, very big lesson in that is that you have to have people that are indicative of your energy and your vibration and people that will protect you.
Absolutely.
Because, baby, this is the land of the wolves.
Yeah, I always say it's the Wild Wild West out here.
The Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
You know,
but the beauty is, you know, we're creating something that's never been in the world before.
Yes.
And, you know, I always say we have to just hold on to the fact that this is a gift, regardless of the industry aspect of it. It's a gift to be able to bring music into the world.
Yes.
You know? So
I really believe is God is going to take this particular I don't want to go super spiritual, but I will say that it's time for us to take certain territory back, and the airwaves, the messages, everything about music is just so powerful. And I am tired of hearing about little such and such just got killed, little such and such just went to jail. What is that? How are you letting your artist behave like that? Because they don't care. They just want to make money off of you. They just want to, you know, it's pandering. And so if we come back and say, come on, you guys, you know, let's show them what the real thing is. I have to, and every artist, you know, of my generation and after, we have to take a certain amount of responsibility because we allowed it. We didn't talk about it. We didn't set boundaries. We didn't say no, you know, enough and call them out on their stuff. You know, and if we had and we had stuck together and we created our own record companies, our own production companies and done each other right, the music business wouldn't be in the state that it's in now. Do you think that the artists of the past, like Marvin Gaye and Stevie and Diana, what if they went to the record companies of now as children, as their age back in the past? Do you think that their talent would have been recognized?
I'm not sure. I think that maybe it would have, it may be recognized, but that may not be who they sign.
Because they didn't have a Berry Gordy. They didn't have a Berry Gordy who had the vision and who also cultured and sewed into them and sending them to school and know how to present themselves. And, you know, are they doing that now? I don't think so.
No, to my knowledge, at least from what I have experienced and witnessed, I don't think a lot of time or money is spent on development at all anymore.
That's the word. Thank you, sis. Development. Artist development.
Yeah, I don't think they really spend any time on that. They find, you know, an artist who they think, a lot of times, at least from my experience, a lot of times it's more about being in competition with another record label. Say, oh, okay, well, you all have a Nicki Minaj, so we're going to have our label's version of a Nicki Minaj, and we're going to make a Cardi B, for example, or whatever.
Yes.
And so then you end up with, you know, five different versions of the same type of female rapper.
because they have no imagination, and they you know, they have to have someone to compare it to. We want somebody. Can you do that? I can't tell you how many times. We want a Whitney Houston type of song. You know, can you write with Christopher, whatever his name, I don't want to say his last name, I'm going to put him on blast, who had one hit, and here I am, you know, a young 20-something-year-old. Well, can you write with him, what, to revitalize his writing, you know? Why can't you just sign me as, you know, as, you know, just speak on the merit of my abilities. But no, you see it being more profitable for me to go over to this guy who's had one hit, who is stuck and can't write right now and needs an infusion of this young woman to ignite his writing ability again. And I said, no. You know,
the power is in the no a lot.
Yes, baby. So I would say to you, open your own record company. 2 years, they're going to be signing on to these 360 deals, and they own your image and own your, and for the rest of your life. If you want to do something else, you know, you got to pay them back. It's a game.
So I recently watched the Whitney Houston movie. Yes. There's a part where she's signing her record deal, and it says something about in perpetuity throughout the universe or something. I'm like, girl, that means forever.
That means forever.
Okay. And everywhere.
And these stories, you know, I don't want to put anybody's name out there and I'm on blast, but let me tell you, some of the people that I've talked about, they signed recording contracts without having a legal representative even look at them. And you were smart. You said, okay, I'm not going to do this that way. I'm going to go. And you did your work, and so you know what it is. You know what it is now. Create your own, sis. And what will happen as a result of the indie artists being so successful? I think that it'll force them to maybe do business a little differently, maybe.
Special thanks to Lynn Davis for joining us at the round table today. She dropped gems on gems and so much wisdom on how you can stay empowered as a woman in the music industry. With longevity and with grace, you can find her online at www.lynndavismusic.com and at Lynn Davis Music on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Thanks for listening to the Run the Tape podcast. Join us on the next episode where we discuss more news and more hot topics in media, music, and technology. Until then, keep good music alive, folks. The Run the Tape podcast is brought to you by Chad Kinsey Studios. Check us out at www.chadkinsey.com.